I have a request that we pull item 18. The information on it needs to be updated, and we'll bring it back at the next meeting. It's not a time-critical issue, so if we could pull that from the consent agenda, it would be greatly appreciated.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other changes to the order of business? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on. Approval of the minutes. Okay, we have two sets of minutes. We have the special board meeting of June 22nd.
I'll move for approval.
Three members, so I don't know whether we can take action.
Oh. Mr. Go ahead.
You want to go, which one are you going to go for?
Well, I was looking at June 22nd, and then Mr. Millar brought up a good point that only three of the four board members that were present at that special meeting are present here tonight. So can we take action on approval of those minutes?
There is technically not a requirement for board members who were absent from the meeting not to vote on it. So I know that that's your custom to abstain, but you don't have to do that. The rest of you can vote on them.
And so I'll vote on it if the people who were there here tonight can confirm that they actually did what they say they did and it's there correctly.
So are you moving approval?
Well, I better not do that, but if you do, I will.
I'll move for approval of June 22nd.
Okay, and I'll second. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes unanimously. Everybody voted. We enjoy voting. Now we have the minutes of June 23rd.
I'll make a
regular
motion.
Board meeting.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of June 23rd.
Okay, moved by Mr. Spadafore, seconded by Mr. Buckman. Is there any discussion? Okay, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously. At the time the agenda was prepared, we had received no correspondence. And we have received no written requests to speak in public comment. Is there anyone here tonight who did not submit a request but who would like to address the board? Okay, seeing none, then we'll move on to reports by school staff and administrators. Okay. Mr. Miller, status of the state budget.
Well, that's an easy one. The budget is as it has been for the last 5 years, going nowhere, been discussed and debated, and much has been made of the disagreements that have happened. Ed has brought to my attention a communique from a TV station in Sacramento in which Assembly Speaker Karen Bass says that she thinks that they have agreed to most of the budget revisions that Schwarzenegger wants to have. The only outstanding issue is how to solve the Prop 98 issue and suspension. And she believes that they can solve the Prop 98 issues without a suspension of Proposition 98, which is probably good news. So we will wait and see what happens. There is many people now saying that the budget will be agreed to by the end of the week, and we can look forward to having some sort of agreement, eliminating the IOUs and eliminating the chaos that's prevalent in Sacramento at this time. But, on the other hand, we've heard all this before. So we'll wait and see. I'm rather pessimistic about their abilities to solve a $26 billion problem without raising taxes. And I'm not so sure that the Republicans have agreed in any of these conversations to increase fees or taxes or any of those issues. So we'll have to wait and see.
Okay, thank you very much.
I have a question, Marilyn, if that's
yes,
okay.
Yes, Mr. Spadafore.
Thank you. Russell, if the budget passes, if that occurs within the next week to 10 days, do you anticipate providing anything to the board before the next board meeting, which won't be until August 18th, if there are some dramatic
If there are issues. Some dramatic issues that relate to our district, then we will have 45 days to amend our budget, and that's part of the California code. If that happens, then Ed and I'll have to sit down and discuss what format takes the best approach for your guys' abilities. Certainly, we'll provide you with some written communications. We'll provide you all the information we have. But at this moment in time, my belief is that the impact.
And he's talking about a difference in the extremely significant impact that we know we're going to sustain. We do not anticipate, in what we're hearing, any huge change to that. What we've communicated with the board has been predicated upon an understanding of that very large, very significant hit that we're going to take. And we asked for and received direction from the board regarding that magnitude of hit. What we would come back to you with, if it is your pleasure, would be something significantly different than that. If it plays out the way that we have shared with you or very, very close to that, we would like to take the direction that we already have and just put it into play absent and would not have a special meeting. And the most significant piece of that really is it involves staffing decisions for the 09-10 school year. And I've shared with the board in some other communications that come August, we're going to have to staff our school district on the basis of some kind of assumption. We have a staffing assumption based upon the budget scenario that we shared with the board and that we believe will be very similar to what comes out of Sacramento, and we'll move forward with that. If we have no budget come the 1st of August, while there won't be anything new to share with the board, our intent, I think, is to move forward and have some confidence in the assumptions we've brought forward so far, and we would move forward with those assumptions unless the board asks us to come back.
Okay, thank you. Reports by board members. Does anyone have something to report? Mr. Angel?
I've been at Pacheco almost every day this summer watching the proceedings of summer school, and a lot of great comments from parents about if there's anything we can do in our budget to keep the summer school programs going, that's something we want to look at. A lot of positive feedback from parents, unanimous positive feedback, and I thought the teachers all did outstanding jobs. And some of the summer school's still going. I know the Pacheco one was only 3 weeks.
Okay. Mr. Buckman.
Just real briefly, I did spend most of today up in San Francisco meeting with or participating with the Small School Districts Association in their strategic planning and working with them possibly on a strategic communications plan. And what they're going through is exactly what we're going through, and the goals that they came up with are amazingly similar to what's going on, and we're just a little bit too big to be a member of that organization. So it was an interesting meeting.
Thank you. Does anyone else? Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I just want to acknowledge the role of Bob Shambrom, a parent in our district. The board had a lot of discussion and progress on the homework policy issue and homework ARs over the past month or so. And Mr. Shambrom, it would be an understatement to say that he was a tireless advocate for examining and reforming the homework policy and homework approach, and I just wanted to acknowledge publicly his contribution to that discussion.
Thank you. Seeing no further board reports, we'll move on then to item 4, which is a public hearing. Mr. Robinette.
Yes, we actually have the need to conduct two public hearings, one right after the other. I'll just introduce them both at once. We are entering negotiations with the California School Employees Association Chapter 89, and so we need to sunshine both the board's interest to enter into negotiations and CSEA's interest, and so we need to conduct a public hearing to do so.
Thank you. So we will first open the public hearing on the CSEA reopener?
board. This is us.
Oh, we're first? Okay. We'll open the public hearing on the board's interests regarding CSEA. Seeing no comment, we'll close the public hearing. And now we'll open the public hearing regarding CSEA's interests in reopeners. Is there any comment? Seeing none, the public hearing is closed. And we will move on to item six. Solar electric project proposal, vendor presentations and selection. Mr. Parker.
Good evening. As we shared with the board at our last meeting, we've invited both REC Solar and Chevron Energy here to make presentations to the board and to be available to answer questions that the board might have. This has been an interesting savings for the district. And we have two proven firms this evening with proven track records. So I think that we're in very good position to consider moving forward. By flip of the coin, REC Solar will be going first. And we've asked Chevron to wait in the closed session room while they do their presentation.
Hot in there.
And then we'll bring Chevron out to do their presentation, and then we'll invite them both to be here to listen to the board's deliberations and decision. We're asking the board to authorize us to move forward to the next step with one firm. In all likelihood, if we are ultimately going to enter into a power purchase agreement, we're selecting that firm this evening. But we're not committing ourselves to a power purchase agreement. That will be several months down the road. So what we are committing is some detailed engineering work and taking the next step, and it's a level of seriousness that we need to take. And it leads to applying for state rebates and making a deposit at the state level in order to secure those rebates before they drop to a lower tier, which would change the economics of the whole situation less favorably for us. So tonight, we're really asking the board to get comfortable with the proposals, with the firms, and to make a decision about which firms you'd like to move onto the next phase with. And with that, I'll ask Chevron to go to the back room, and we'll ask REC to come up.
I've got some preliminary.
Oh, go right ahead.
Preliminary questions, if I may. One is our commitment initially would be $110,000, $60,000 in development engineering cost, and $50,000.
Well, we set a maximum of $65,000 for engineering costs, and if that were to change, we'd come back to the board, and we haven't asked the board yet to commit the approximate $50,000 in order to apply for the California CSI incentive funds. In some formats, the PPA partner would actually front that money. I think it's probably advisable for us to front the money just to demonstrate our seriousness into the project and in the format of partnering with the PPA firm.
Okay, and it would really help me if preliminarily somebody would explain the relationship between kilowatt hour price, escalators, and what's the other one? That whole pricing relationship.
Let me give a shot. Every power purchase agreement, or just about any power purchase agreement, is going to have an automatic annual escalation clause. Time value of money, et cetera. And let's just say it's 3.5% per year. So we will contractually be obligated to increase the amount we pay per kilowatt hour year after year at the rate of 3.5% increase per year.
To the PPA?
Yes, because we'll be buying all the energy that they produce.
Brad, I think gave me the bad microphone again. I hate that. Thank you, Mark. I was just kidding, AGP guys. So that escalator is a recognition of what real world facts, the fact that energy costs keep going up every year,
that
and that they deserve to have that same energy cost.
I think it has to do with the time value of money and the money that they're upfronting and that they're wanting. It factors into the whole overall economics.
Okay, go ahead.
Then the savings that the district would project to receive has a lot to do with what the utility company rates are going to do. And that's why we've asked to look at a lower escalator for the utility companies or a higher rate of escalation for the utility companies. Nobody has a crystal ball to know for sure. We know what the historical averages have been, and everybody has a sense that the cost of energy usually doesn't go down. But there's no guarantee that we'll get 6% per year increased cost for our PG&E electric bill. It may only be 4.5% per year.
So in the materials, that's why we get a kind of a matrix of various
right.
percentage factors across.
Because it's a very important thing to go into with our eyes open, that if we're going to go in, we're taking a certain amount of risk, that if we agree to a 3% PPA escalator, we're risking that, okay, that the PG&E rate's going to go up at a higher rate than that contractual escalation factor.
If I may do an electric joke, I just think the light bulb went on. Thank you.
Dr. Eisenrath-Rogers.
Yes. Mr. Parker, the conversation I had today was that there is an alternative way of predicting that, of setting a tariff escalation.
Setting a rate structure that's tied to the PG&E tariff rate, so that there is an alternative where you could conceivably agree to some percentage less than the PG&E rate. The projection likely would be that long-term potential savings for the district would be less because the risk is less.
For camera purposes, is there a preference as to where these...
Ask those guys back there.
Gentlemen, is there a preference as to where these go so we don't block? We can just hold them off to the side. These are just static. Brought every type of multimedia possible. Popcorn and penis later on.
You got the laptop to work, which is pretty rare around here.
It was a miracle.
Gremlins in the laptop. Oh, yeah? The gremlins are still here. Are you afraid?
All righty. Well, we will go ahead and get started. First and foremost, thank you very much for hosting us this evening. It's been a good detailed process getting to this point. Brad has definitely asked us quite a few questions as to how we can prepare for this meeting and present the board with the information that hopefully addresses all the questions. To get started with some introductions, my name is Matthew Woods. I'm one of the partners with REC Solar. With me is Scott Reed, who is the West Coast project developer for Sun Edison, the third-party financier. Chris Ostreich, who is our senior manager of engineering at REC Solar, and Jim Coombs, who is our manager of project finance. Probably ask them to sit down so we're not standing at attention the whole meeting. But to get started, really what our objectives are is to talk a little bit about our team that we have pulled together for this solar project, the experience of the companies that we're bringing to the table, hopefully address any questions that do come up around the competency of the organization as well as the experience, talk a little bit about the PPA rate structure. We can go into as detailed of an analysis as you would like in respect to the overall system economics, but for the presentation this evening, we will be providing a high-level overview and trying to discuss and articulate what the different options are with a third-party financed power purchase agreement. So to get started, I did want to set the framework for who the partners are and the companies that we're bringing to the table this evening. So REC Solar will be the customer representative, i.e. we will be the company that is directly working and facilitating with San Luis Coastal Unified School District. We are not only the project developer, but in this particular project, we are also the installer and the design engineer of record who will be facilitating, building, designing, and project managing the entire project. In order for a third-party power purchase agreement to work, you really have three pieces to the equation. You have the development of the project, you have the financing of the project, and working with school projects, you have the lovely task of working through DSA to ensure that you can have an expedited process to ensure that what we're proposing can actually be a realized solar project. So what we focus on is trying to bring the best team to the table that can meet each of those expectations. Providing the third-party project financing for this presentation this evening and as our primary partner is Sun Edison. SunEdison is responsible in a third-party power purchase agreement for actually owning and operating the system, which would be installed at the Slo Coastal Unified facility. So as Brad mentioned earlier, something extremely important to take into consideration is the fact that there are no capital costs associated with these systems. So how the economics of a third-party power purchase agreement works is you have a third party who actually is purchasing the system and is actually taking all of the calculated risks of the production of solar electricity and then generating their return from the project over 20 or 25 years in respect to kilowatt hours of purchased energy from the school district. That's the role that SunEdison will take. In addition, one of the biggest challenges that organizations face in working with school districts is the complexity of working through DSA. DSA can be a very rigorous process, I'm sure. Lots of you have experience in working with that. We've recently completed some DSA projects, as you get in some of the pictures down in Southern California. For this particular project, because we're really focusing at this point on solar canopies, i.e. covered parking structures, REC Solar has brought on an engineering firm to facilitate and do all of the DSA engineering for us, Bleymeyer Engineering, who has the most experience in the state in respect to doing DSA solar canopy projects. So what we're looking to try to do is formulate the most experienced teams in what we see as the three critical phases of project development. To give a brief background on REC Solar, REC Solar is a Cal Poly San Luis Obispo senior project that came into formation in 1997. So we're currently in the 12th year of business. What started as a small business focused on renewable energy has quickly grown to becoming one of the largest solar integrators in the United States. So headquarters for REC Solar is in San Luis Obispo, so I'm fortunate. Design engineering with DSA as well as project financing. REC Solar, as I mentioned, has grown. Headquarters still is in San Luis Obispo, but as you can see by the detailed description, REC has now grown throughout the United States, really focusing on the key solar markets. You don't see us in many areas on the East Coast, primarily because you don't have incentives on the East Coast. One of the primary financial returns driven with solar electricity are the incentives and rebates that are provided. Again, as Brad mentioned earlier, timeliness of the ability to try to capture these rebates is what is fundamentally driving the return on investment and the favorable return with solar. So we talked about the growth briefly. Last year, REC Solar was the largest solar contractor in the United States, as determined by total number of projects installed, with about 1,500 systems installed. And in this year, we're projecting about 2,500 systems. That's both in the residential market as well as the large commercial market. There's quite a few local solar projects that many people don't know about. Costco, as one example, is fully solar-powered by REC Solar. Some of the community buildings, Ludwig Center, are all solar-powered facilities that all come into the experience that we hope to bring to the table for this project. The strengths that we really focus on is, in looking at a solar project, I don't think it's necessarily only the experience of the general contractor, the project developer, but of the team that they bring to the table, that they're proven and they have the ability to execute. One of the unique things about REC Solar in San Luis Obispo is this is our backyard, but this is also where we employ this significant a significant amount of the people and the resources. So as we take a look at this project, this is not a project that for the construction, the design, the engineering, the day-to-day interface, we're bringing people in. This is a group of people that are already stationed here in San Luis Obispo. And a project of this magnitude really looks to simply increase the headcount and the full-time employees that we're bringing to the San Luis Obispo area, as well as the proven experience, the processes that we're bringing to the table and having done this, again, as we allude to, 2,500 times for grid-connected solar installations this year, presence, the products, partnerships, and, of course, the price. In a complex industry such as this, which is quite competitive, we're always focusing on the deal economics. Many people ask, who is the biggest competitor to solar electricity or to our firm? It's the utilities at the end of the day, because we're really faced with how can we provide solar electricity at a cost which is equal to or below what entities are paying from the utilities. And I think tonight we'll be able to demonstrate what that that cost is able to do. SunEdison, our project financing partner, is really the company that invented the power purchase agreement. And I don't mean that lightly. Sun Edison, uniquely enough, was a competitor of REC Solar's in the previous years, and through a change in business models, they've really focused on project finance and tried to establish relationships with the best contractors out in the market, and REC Solar is the prime contractor in that position. Sun Edison has over 75 megawatts, so 75 million watts of projects that are currently installed and under management in the United States. Remember, with a third-party financed project, the risk of production, the risk of the investment, and the risk of performance really relies heavily and solely on the owner of the system. So in today's credit-constrained market, where you're looking for investment capital to invest in solar systems, one of the biggest driving factors is which company can actually produce what they say they're going to produce, because the return on investment for this project financier is the system production and the payment of the host customer. Sun Edison's been the most successful in the market in being able to deliver projects, to manage projects, currently has the most projects under management, and has historically, per the California Solar Initiative, been able to develop and deliver projects at the lowest cost, which of course has increased adoption nationwide. For the engineering firm that we're going to be working with, Bleymeyer Engineering, this I think is something that's extremely important to focus on when we're talking about a project for a school district such as San Luis Coastal. The reason being is what we are currently proposing are canopy parking structures, which are unique DSA approval required structures that, as you can imagine, can take a significant amount of time to get through the process. Bleymeyer has done third-party PPA finance projects for DSA approved projects on over 30 schools in California with over 50 megawatts of engineered and designed systems. So what we would be doing with San Luis Coastal Unified is we would be providing a standardized design, which we'd be able to get through the permitting process, which would then turn into an over-the-counter permit, where we would be able to, in a single permitting process, take four schools within the district through a single permitting process with an over-the-counter DSA-approved canopy structure to expedite Coastal. As we have discussed, is the potential opportunity to do canopy-style covered areas for both livestock as well as for children in the bus loading area, as well as potentially for picnic areas. What we would propose for our canopy structures, again, is a uniform proposal that we will be able to push through regardless of the application type with an over-the-counter permit. So if we do have a unique application that we're looking into, we will encompass that into the design scope so that we can actually present the solution that the school board is looking for. So in summary, when we talk about the partnership, to highlight some of the benefits that we're really looking to is REC Solar has installed more solar systems nationwide than any company in the United States. A strong municipal background with DSA experience. One of the things that we think is quite important, being a local business, is San Luis Obispo is, REC Solar is local to San Luis Obispo. We're actually sitting on the other side in many occasions, because the majority of our business when it comes to project development doesn't necessarily take place here in San Luis Obispo. But for this particular project, we feel that it leverages our strengths and our core business, which is located here. Sun Edison has the most solar megawatts under management, the most solar megawatts in operation, the industry-leading pricing and the industry-leading production, as demonstrated by Sun Edison's solar projects under management have produced 106% of estimated production. What's key about that is in order to get projects financed from companies like Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, a company has to demonstrate a track record in system performance and production. We're very confident in bringing Sun Edison to the table with this particular project, because it's one thing to develop the project. It's an entirely different thing to finance the project. And in today's economy, the ability to access tax equity has been challenged. Sun Edison has demonstrated time and again that they can develop and deploy these projects. And third, with Blymeyer on the engineering side, we really have demonstrated that we have an exclusive arrangement with an engineering firm for this particular project, where they will only be working with REC Solar, having the most DSA experience under their belt. So in summary, you have a company that is local, having had designed and installed the most solar projects in the U.S., the financing company that has the most total projects under management and has been financed, and the engineering firm that has clearly demonstrated by experience and their track record that they have the most DSA experience in order to push these projects through in a timely fashion.
May I ask a question, please?
Yes.
I didn't write down at the time that it was on the PowerPoint. Using the Blymeyer, that's it right there. Estimated 8-week process for DSA approval.
So what I'd like to do is, if there are questions specifically about the DSA approval process, I think it would be great to open that up for discussion at the end, and Chris can definitely discuss exactly what the process would be, because there are different options in looking at a canopy structure as to what is the most important factor that we're really driving. Is it time? Is it cost? And we can speak to exactly how we can execute on that.
Okay. I had some questions, Baron, if I can. If this is a good time.
Yeah, please do. And then what I'll do, just to provide a quick overview, hopefully you'll have a better understanding of the partnership, and then we will go into a high-level summary of the different offerings to talk most importantly around what are the decisions that you're making when it comes to rate escalation from a PPA plus PG&E rate escalation, and where are the risks, where are the benefits, and how do you actually balance that?
Yeah. The questions I had are general, and I've got several, and then the other information you're going to provide. First of all, respect you and your company for what you're doing, because this is definitely the future, and you hope that it continues to grow for
Thank
all
you.
Our needs. The plan's going to be on all the school sites, and does each site have its own particular plan depending upon the physical makeup of the site, first of all?
So the site-specific information will really be formulated in the formal design process, which will be forthcoming. What we've done for the initial analysis, because we have provided indicative pricing, indicative sizing, is we have taken a look at 10 of the school sites. And what we've really focused on is what is the consumption of that site. Some of the sites, of course, are clearly consuming way more power. San Luis High School, of course, is consuming far more power than many of the elementary schools, as an example. So what we will do is we'll take a look at kilowatt hours of consumption, first and foremost, to determine if that's going to drive the economics, plus the rate structure that the school is working on. There's various different rate structures in PG&E territory. We estimate that at the school sites we looked at, the average cost of power is about 15.1 cents. So total consumption, cost of power plus size that we're working with will drive the final engineering design.
It's, again, appropriate for the curriculum.
Great question. So the answer is yes in an informal setting, no in a district-approved curriculum. So what I mean by that is we're currently actually working with a student in San Luis Coastal who is actually developing a presentation for her 11th grade biology that's going to be presenting on the benefits of solar electricity, and is working with one of her instructors, as well as to be presenting at back-to-school night and to the PTA. We also have done with some of the private school institutions, such as the Athenian School, where we have integrated solar curriculum into their classroom and have done some reach out where they've actually helped participate in some of the installation. So, again, my answer is yes, we have done that, and we'd look to do that. It's not a district-approved curriculum, i.e. that one could take an AP course in solar design.
But your company's had experience, and you're comfortable with developing something if it's appropriate for the curriculum of the particular school, and is something in the past that you've worked with.
So, yeah, yes to both of those. Okay. We've done it in the past, and we'd be comfortable in doing it going forward.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions before we move on? All right. So, again, some of the companies that we have to work with, of course, you've seen some of the largest name brands moving towards solar electricity. Some you have no idea that when you're shopping in Costco and or Walmart that they're solar-powered facilities. Others have made it paramount within their overall marketing and branding. So what I'd like to do is present a high-level analysis as to how solar electricity will work under this particular situation, framing A, what the current school district is utilizing in respect to monetary cost of power, how that power cost will be increasing over time, and then talk about how solar electricity via a PPA, third-party purchase, can help offset that. I would expect that I will spend probably no more than 5 minutes on this part, so we don't take the whole evening, and then open it up for discussions. But again, if I'm breezing through this too quickly, please don't hesitate to stop me. We can go into the details. So what the first slide and what we'd like to demonstrate in our presentation, as has been previously provided to the board, is what is the current cost of power that is currently being consumed? So at the 10 sites that you see down here in the right-hand side that we looked at, San Luis High, Morro Bay High, Laguna Middle, Los Osos Middle, Baywood Elementary, Del Mar, Bishop's Peak, Pacheco, the Transportation Department, and Sinsheimer. These 10 sites are utilizing currently slightly over $500,000 in electricity annually via PG&E. At an estimated an average PG&E utility cost of 15.1 cents per kilowatt hour across those 10 sites. We could get into specifics onto each of those particular facilities. Now, California historical rate increase, as demonstrated by the graph in the right top of the screen, has been increasing at about 6.3% on average for the last 30 years. So we need to take into consideration historical rate increases when we're taking a look at forecasting future rate increases on a go-forward basis. Being in this business, one of the things, objectives we don't have to overcome often is our customers forecasting that utility rates are going to be decreasing. If that's a concern of the board, we definitely can talk about a rate tariff index, about the assumed risk of potential increase in PG&E costs going forward. In today's economy and what we've seen based upon historical rate increases, it's been demonstrated that rates will continue to increase. So merely what we did with this particular graph is just to represent what the utility costs would look like from the district under different utility rate increases. So if we're forecasting a 3.5% rate increase, as is demonstrated below, 25 years from now, under current consumption patterns, meaning the district is not using any more or any less power, the bills will be on an annual basis close to $1 million. Of course, on the flip side, if you're seeing a 6% rate increase, as has been demonstrated by history, closer to $1.8 million. So that's really to set the base case as to what are PG&E rates going to do with or without solar electricity based upon forecasting forward what historical rates have been under looking at various different rate scenarios. I think it's important to understand this piece before we go into the PPA rate analysis. So from a graphical representation, are there any questions as to this demonstration? Secondly, then, what we have done is we have presented three different power purchase agreement rates based upon a rate escalation. As Brad had mentioned, the rate escalation is really driven by what the school board's fundamental decision and practices are. Theoretically, you could enter into a third-party power purchase agreement where there was zero rate increase for the next 20 years. That, of course, would mean a much higher starting point as to where you're purchasing your power from the very early stages. Because at the end of the day, the third-party financier has to generate an income. The length of the term, similar to a home loan, is going to drive what the payment is, what the, if you will, interest rate or the rate escalation. But what you will see is with a power purchase agreement, you have various opportunities at the end of that agreement to either purchase the system, re-enter into an agreement, or actually have the system removed. And that can be modeled and that risk assessment can be taken accordingly. The final slide before I go into the various rate scenarios, which I will, again, breeze through, is just to give an indication of what type of savings are we talking about with a power purchase agreement. And this slide I will actually pass out to everyone. Jim, do you have that with you? It's actually on the back seat if you could grab that. And this is just an indication of one particular scenario, which is based upon a 25-year cumulative PPA savings, a 3.5% PPA rate escalator, and a 5% PG&E escalator, which is below what historical averages have been, what type of savings are you going to experience? In year one, the savings would be just shy of $5,000. In year 5, over $110,000. In year 10, $487,000. In year 15, $1.2 million, and so forth. And that's simply demonstrated by the savings that the district will get by the hedge. The rate increase that you're forecasting via the third-party power purchase agreement is less than what actual rate increases are, and thus the savings, the delta, is the annual savings that the district realizes year over year. Are there any questions on that analysis? So, again, as I've presented, this was all presented the next four pages previous to the board meeting, so hopefully you've had a chance to review that. If not, I'm happy to address questions. Really, what we have done is we have presented each different rate tariff. So each different starting rate tariff from the third-party power purchase agreement at a 15.75 cent per kilowatt-hour rate, a 15 cent per kilowatt-hour rate, and a 14.75 cent per kilowatt-hour rate to demonstrate the related savings over time at based upon the PG&E rate escalation. So I'll take one particular example. So if we are forecasting, if you enter into an agreement, which is a 4% PPA rate escalator with an initial starting rate of 14.75 cents per kilowatt hour, that would indicate that year one, you're paying less for your power than you're currently paying, which is on average 15.1 cents. Over time, if we're forecasting a 6%, or the board is forecasting a 6% PG&E rate escalator, you can see the indicative savings that would transpire, and over a 20-year period, over $4.3 million saved in electricity. Again, simply from the hedge that takes place between the starting rate, the PPA rate escalation, and the PG&E forecasted rate escalation. So that really captures what we were hoping to with the meeting in setting the framework for who is REC Solar, the relationships that we bring to the table, the experience by providing and having installed the most solar systems in the United States with a project financier who has financed more systems than any company in the United States, and the engineering firm who has been responsible for the DSA approval process for more DSA solar projects than any company. And, of course, leveraging on the fact that working with a school district, which is literally in our backyard, we hope that we can develop a strategic and strong partnership. So at this time, we'd love to open it up for questions if there are any.
I'm just wondering if you can anticipate a completion schedule, if you were to start, when you would be able to start and when you would look to complete.
What we would see as the schedule transpiring is post the meeting this evening, the board will be making a recommendation as to which organization to move forward with. At that point, we would be entering into a letter of intent, if you will, to engage in engineering services where we would have a potentially a 6 to 8 week time period where we would be doing the initial analysis and study as to the particular sites where we'd be hoping to come back with sizing, locations, schools, as we had discussed previously. And then post the design engineering back to the board for final approval to move forward, and that at that point in time we'd actually enter into the engineering to move DSA through and then start construction. So depending upon the speed of the decision making, this could be anywhere from a 4 to a 12-month project from where we are today to initiation and completion.
And the DSA approval piece of it could be as short as, you said, an over-the-counter approval?
As short as an over-the-counter of 8 weeks. And, Chris, do you want to speak to what we'd be looking at for the process in that respect?
Definitely. We've looked at a couple.
So there's you have the speed considerations and the cost considerations that have to be balanced out. And what we're looking for is the best of both worlds. We see an 8-week turnaround is actually quite fast. And if we're able to do that in a cost savings measure by designing to the requirements of San Luis Obispo versus the requirements of Mammoth, if you will, then we believe we'll have a better structure at the end of the day.
with the canopy structure, the way it's designed, you're able to design the structure right up front to the design considerations of the area. So that can be done up front, put through the submittal process. As we're doing all the site-specific design for all the schools, the electrical design, working with the utility and everything. So that eight-week approval is not 8 weeks and then we start doing the work. It's in parallel. And that's why we're really leveraging that relationship with Blymeyer, where they're focused on that. We have a very strong engineering team in San Luis Obispo that will also be working on the site-specific aspects of each school.
Hmm. Anything else?
Mm-hmm.
Walter.
Thank you. So REC, some of the literature refers to, I think it was Poway Unified, where you did mostly, looks like mostly rooftop installations, but some standalone or canopy type ones?
Yeah, there were some ground, I mean, the definition, there were some okay. ground-mounted installations.
Like the
apes
up there on the hill.
Correct. In fact, you can see.
Right. I know.
It's difficult to see, but actually on this particular site that we're looking at right here, you can actually see. It's challenging with the sizing here, but the ground-mounted piece of the installation,
oh, okay.
which is demonstrated down here. It's actually on a, you have both rooftop systems as well as ground-mounted systems based upon the sizing. Again, in some of these sites, we will often be size constrained as to how big right. of a system we can put on the site. So it won't be a 100% offset. It will just be a partial offset of the current consumption at that facility.
Okay. And that anticipates one of my questions, and maybe it's more for Brad, but what percentage, based on what you know now, and I acknowledge that it's preliminary, what percentage of the district-wide power consumption, power needs will be satisfied by a system, a solar system?
Brad, do you want to take...
I would preface it by saying that while REC's identified 10 schools, I think the next phase may identify more. And maybe some of the sites that have already been identified might drop off the list because they don't pencil out as attractively.
Okay.
The size that we're talking about now is probably, what are we, about 60% of the total energy, electric energy consumption of the district.
60%?
I think so.
Okay. Thank you, Brad. And what is a reasonable life expectancy for one of these systems, one of these units? How much life we got left after a 19-year buyback?
So, great question, first and foremost. I mean, when you take a look at a solar electric system, you really have two pieces at the end of the day to the project. You have solar panels, and you have the inverters, or the brains of the system, if you will. In a power purchase agreement, one of the key components is the system is maintained and operated by a third party. That risk doesn't fall on San Luis Coastal. But to answer your question, solar panels themselves have a 25-year power output guarantee. From the manufacturer, what that means is that after 25 years, the panels themselves have to be producing at 80% of their initial nameplate rating or the initial efficiency. So it's not in year 25 they can barely just be producing. There is a performance index which has to be met. So 25 years from now, what can you expect for production from the panels themselves? At least 80% of what they were producing from day one.
And is the degradation related to the actual photovoltaic materials or the covers, the things that are bothered by the UV and effects of the sun?
It's really primarily driven by the latter. I mean, the oxidation that takes place within the tempered glass lens covering the solar panels, I would simulate it very similar to cataracts. Over time, you're not getting the same type of light that's going to be passing through the panel, and thus the production decreases accordingly. It's not necessarily a linear production or linear degradation, if you will. So after 10 years, the system is guaranteed at 90% output, after 25 years at 80% output. So realistically, when we're forecasting production, and when Sun Edison's third-party engineers who actually work for the banks are forecasting production, you're taking a look at about a 3/4 or 1% of production loss on an annual basis.
Okay. And acknowledging it that it's fairly negligible,
Are those degradations addressable by removing and replacing exterior parts of it, or is it necessary to keep the panels as an integral part?
And there's a certain amount of money and or really megawatts of solar energy that are in each respective tier. So it's a stair step. Once we've entered into a tier, once the applications for the equivalent megawatts have been filled up for that tier, it drops to the next level. The rationale behind that is they're looking to spread the incentives out to as many customers as possible. The downside of that is the system economics get worse and worse the greater the rebate reduction. So when Brad spoke to the timeliness, of course, the economics that we present today are based upon the current incentive levels. If incentives change, that will impact the economics.
And is there a point in time where we've got it built, it's operating, and we're in the clear even if they do mess around with the incentives?
Yeah, and so that's really what the most critical step is. Once we have decided to proceed, REC Solar and SunEdison will work with San Luis Coastal to reserve the rebate. It's yours then. It's earmarked. There is a fee associated with reserving that rebate, but then it is earmarked for the district for a period of time to actually execute on the project. Now, if the project stagnates and doesn't move forward after 12 months, then that rebate goes back into the pool and the rebate is lost. But no, it is locked in for the particular project because there is an inherent time that takes to develop these projects. We wouldn't go as far as developing it and on the day we turn it on say, how much money are we getting? We know that well in advance, as will you.
Okay. And I think I've covered them all. Let me see. Yes, I have. Thank you.
Mr. Angel?
John was before me.
Thanks. Thank you, Bill. I had a question about the financing model, and I'm going to ask Russell to help me with this and to see if I am even going in the right direction, because my family will attest that I'm not much of a financial wizard. Is the funding for this solely from SunEdison? Are there third parties that are funding this? And what are the guarantees for us as a school district that the financial end of it or the funding end of it will not be altered dramatically before the end of the first lease or term where you have a project where somebody walks away because of financial downturn?
Great couple of questions. In creating the power purchase agreement model, one of the things that we realized and sought to do was to bring scalable quantities of mainstream finance, project finance capital into the marketplace. So SunEdison early on formed partnerships with Goldman Sachs and Wells Fargo and a number of other top shelf banks as well as finance companies like MetLife, who bring, among other things, what we call a tax appetite to the table. They have not quite unlimited, but they have they make profits, they've got to pay taxes on them, they'd like to use the tax incentives that are available by owning solar projects so that they can reduce their tax liabilities. So that's a piece of the financial piece for them. One of the important pieces that we did was that we created specific funds that are basically it's a block of money, $150 million or $100 million, that various partners contribute, and then we fill those funds up, if you will, with commissionable projects. Okay, so unlike our other competitors, we don't have to go out with a signed contract and then shop it around and say, hey, we're trying to raise money. We've already got the funds set up with the finance partners that we've got done. We've financed more than $500 million worth of projects over the last 6 years through the exclusive vehicles that we've created.
I guess what I'm asking, bottom line, is there a risk that if financial downturns occur in the future, that there's a possibility of SunEdison walking away from the project for financial reasons before the conclusion of the term? And then what is the school district's situation at that point if we're left with a structure and no one operating it?
Sure. The folks that are at risk in terms of the capital sense, obviously, are the Goldman Sachs of the world. They have, and SunEdison, sure, SunEdison could go out of business in 5 years or 10 years or something like that. The PPA contract has what are called step-in rights, so that the bank
which is on the hook after all and is the one is at risk, because if the system is not being operated correctly or not being operated at all, you're not going to pay a bill for a power purchase agreement bill. You'll simply just use the same amount of electricity from the utility instead of being from the solar system.
But the billing would go back to PG&E.
Correct. Yeah, because through the net metering, to the extent that we don't produce power that you use, it's going to be used or it's going to be supplied through the utility. But SunEdison and the bank, which is on the hook for the investment, would not be receiving any revenue. So that's why they have step-in rights, so that they would have the ability to bring upwards of 30 to 40 years. The oldest solar systems that are 50 years old these days that are still in commercial operation. So their degradation, as Matthew was describing earlier, is a very slow, predictable rate. So it potentially could make a lot of sense. We would negotiate based on whatever the value of the electricity that would be produced for you would be at that time. And the second alternative is that if you wanted to buy the system and we could work out a mutually acceptable price, again, based on the value of what the system has created, also given the fact that it's going to be an extremely well-maintained and well-cared-for system. So all those sorts of factors, no one can really predict what those values would be, 20 years from now, so there's no point in really trying. But at the end of the day, if we can't reach agreements on those two other options, we simply say thanks, it's been a great 20 years, and that's it.
Mr. Angel.
Thank you.
How do you minimize the impact to student learning and also keep our students safe?
How do we minimize the impact to student learning?
As you're constructing the...
Okay, via the operations, not right. Via the solar system itself.
Right.
Right. Clearly, when we're working on projects, we have to have a very tight dialogue with the district in respect to when we're actually installing these particular projects. In an ideal situation, of course, we're trying to develop these projects when school is not in session. So that's oftentimes over different break periods when we're going to have the maximum amount of disruption to the overall school. As we're talking about canopy structures, though, we're really not talking about impacting classrooms. In fact, of being on roofs and making a significant amount of noise where we're going to impact the overall learning. Thus, it's a coordinated effort. There's really not one answer. We're trying our best to work with the district as far as installation schedules, to have all of the major disruptive type activities where if we have any heavy machinery on campus when the children are not.
It's only in the parking lots too. Dr. Eisendrath-Rogers.
I'm wondering if you have any kind of guarantee that you can offer us. I'm looking at the page that you gave us that shows the cumulative savings. And is there a guarantee of these cumulative savings, such as if they're not realized, SunEdison writes us a check?
So when it comes to the savings from the solar electric system, there are two things that we can predict, and there's one thing that we can't predict. We can predict the production. We can predict the rate escalation from the third-party power purchase agreement. We cannot predict what utility rates are going to do in the future. So, by the financial nature of a third-party power purchase agreement, the PPA provider would not write a check if utility rates did not increase. But as Brad alluded to, there are some financial vehicles or a third-party power purchase agreement whereby the agreement can be set up in a tariff indexing type of structure whereby the power purchase agreement rate is an agreed-upon percentage discount below what utility costs are. You have lower risk, but you also have reduced savings. So the upside opportunity is you're not going in the red. The downside opportunity is if utility rates continue to increase at the rates that they are, you're going to always be paying a slightly percentage reduction less than what you would be paying from PG&E. So whereby you could enter into a PPA agreement where you have a 3.5% rate escalation, but under a tariff index whereby you eliminate all risks, if rates go up 25%, you might just be paying a 23% rate increase. But by nature, there has to be a shared risk and income stream via the various structures. Does that answer your question? It can be some kind of complex.
No, it actually does. Thank you very
Great,
much.
Great, thank you.
Okay, Walter, I just... before you start... No, I just wanted to note that we had allowed 15 minutes for the presentation, and we've gone well over that. And we have the other presenter waiting. So,
should I not ask my question?
No, go ahead.
Thank you. What happens during weekends, vacations, and stuff to the excess power that the units will be producing?
So via power purchase agreement, when we take a look at overall power consumption from the school district, we're taking into consideration cumulative consumption. So over the weekends, the solar system is still producing power and thus still generating a bill, which would be paid via the power purchase agreement. But again, I would urge you to consider you're looking at net savings, not real-time savings, because as an example, on a Sunday, if the school is completely closed, yet the solar system is producing, by nature, you're generating a bill from solar electricity, the account. It's not a cost accounting basis where you have X amount of kilowatt hours produced at various rates, unless you have a rate tariff which matches that. But at the end of the day, in the most simple terms, and I think it's easy for people to represent for their own personal homes, I'm not at my house during the day. I have a solar system on my roof. All day long, my house produces electricity. When I come home, my meter has gone backwards, not forward. When I got home today, I was fortunate enough, I turned the air conditioning on because the house was hot, and I'm now consuming power far in excess of what I consumed. Net-net, at the end of the day, I consume just about what I produced. The time didn't match my consumption and my production, but the net effect did, and thus I am net metered, i.e. the utility is looking at total consumption versus total production, not the timeliness in nature. Does that answer your question?
I think it does. There's just this, and it doesn't really bother me. I'm just trying to figure it out in my head, and that is I understand all of what you're saying about it's a net cost or savings for the district, but it seems to me the flip side of the escalation thing mm-hmm. is that you get to sell excess, not you, but the PPA gets to sell excess power to PG&E at that escalation rate, or what it turns out to be, or at the retail rate. So I'm just trying to make sure that when we negotiate kind of both sides of that.
So
if you know what I mean.
I think I'm now starting to understand what the concern is, which is the PPA company able to take the production that they're currently selling to you, have you pay for it, and then have the utility paying them for it?
Make a little extra.
And by essence, no, because the utility bill is not in SunEdison's name. The utility bill remains to be in San Luis Coastal Unified School District's name. So the net impact of your utility consumption, the savings are going directly to you. Imagine it no different than during the day when the sun is out, we're pulling an extension cord from Paso School District and we're plugging it right into San Luis. And we're just using all of their power when the sun is out. Yet you still have a net impact from your bill. But they don't own your school. They don't own your PG&E bill. You continue to own it. What's going to happen is you're still going to have a PG&E bill. You're just also going to have a bill from the PPA company. So the net production, which is being demonstrated when the school is not in session, is simply going to reduce the PG&E bill.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. If there are no further questions, then thank you very much for the presentation.
Absolutely. Thank you, and we appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Well,
yes,
bring the other group up, if you can.
Yeah, I do.
You come from the back room. Very good.
Okay, and we'll send you back to the green room and bring out the other group.
The green room, all right.
I think if no one objects, we'll take a 5-minute break while the other group sets up. 5-minute break. Okay, the board is back in session. And we're prepared to hear the presentation from Chevron, I believe, Mr. Parker.
And first, I'd just like to thank the board for your attention, and it's obvious that you're very interested in the topic, and it's there's a lot to learn about this, to really understand the complexity of the situation, and I really appreciate the seriousness with which you're looking at it. And with that, I'd like to introduce Ashu Jain with Chevron Energy and his team to discuss their proposal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. Good evening. As Mr. Parker mentioned, my name is Ashu Jain. I'm a business development manager with Chevron Energy Solutions. I'd like to quickly introduce the rest of our team here. Jeff Lovejoy is our senior project manager. He's responsible for all solar projects in the southern half of the state. Ed Grandall is our construction manager. He's based in San Luis Obispo. He's a long-term resident of San Luis Obispo. He's been here how many years? 30 years, and he's been with our company for over 15 years, so he's a long-term employee. Emma Hall is our marketing manager. She's been very instrumental in developing this project. And we also have Lenore Estrada. She's an associate. She's not an employee of our company, but she's here purely as an observer. I'm going to quickly run through the presentation, and looking at the time constraint, but please feel free to interrupt me at any time if you have any questions. I'm going to talk about our company and our proposal. You might not be aware, but Chevron Corporation comes from K-14, so K-12 and community colleges. So that's what we've specialized in over the last few years. That's our home. Of the projects, solar projects, going into school districts and community colleges have been installed by us. That's a huge percentage. So we have a tremendous amount of knowledge and experience to make sure that this project will be successful, because we have a track record. We have a lot of experience with DSA. Over the last 3 or 4 years, we've completed 16.4 megawatts of DSA projects. And I'm presuming everybody knows who DSA is, and Division of State Architect, which approves projects. So we have completed 16.4 megawatts. Just in the last 6 weeks, we have sold another 4.8 megawatts, which will be going through DSA. And in the next few weeks, we hope to book another 10 to 15 megawatts. So this is an area that we have, we're taking hold now. I think we're the only company which has pre-approved solar shade structures, pre-approved by DSA. So we have three designs which have been approved by DSA. So what it does, it cuts down the DSA approval time from several months to just a couple of days. So that's a huge benefit. We can really expedite the project. One of the benefits that we offer to our customers is that we are willing to guarantee the performance of our projects. And this is a guarantee that's coming from, one of the biggest companies in the country. So the guarantee is, it's a financial guarantee is really solid, that if the project doesn't perform as we state, we will actually write you a check. If it overperforms, you keep the savings. So that's a guarantee that's made, by our company to all of our school customers, school and community colleges. These are some comments from, our past customers, good communications, good planning, one of the best projects I've ever been involved in, completed on time and under budget with no claims or disputes. So we have, over time, because we've done, and these are all school and community. Well, actually, these are not all schools. The last one is a project we did for the Metropolitan Transportation Authority in Los Angeles. But we have now, because we've done so many of these solar projects, brought it down, you know, to a science where we can really deliver the project without any mistakes. Over the last one year, we've received many awards for our projects. I'll just highlight a couple of them. The Green Apple Award, it's from CHIPS, the Collaborative for High Performance Schools. We got the award for climate change. We were also named one of the 50 most innovative companies by Fast Company magazine. That was a few months ago. And, you know, Dave Thurman, the DSA architect, mentioned that, you know, Chevron Energy Solutions is really the role model for other companies in the school industry and in the solar for solar projects for schools. Because of our heritage, safety is one of our primary concerns in every project. And I'm going to have Ed Grondahl, who's actually going to be responsible for safety at school site, say a few words about that.
Good evening. Just as it states, their safety is paramount to all our projects. And I just wanted to state that we develop a safety management for any project that we do. We have a safety program that we use, and the student safety and the faculty safety is paramount for us. And so we work with the Department of Justice to make sure that our contractors are all cleared through the Department of Justice. We also I'll make sure that we cordon off any of the construction areas that we work on. In this situation, we'll probably do partial.
I'm pretty sure they will change. Once we're going to look at each and every school again and do a thorough analysis of what the best, you know, optimum value of solar should be and where it should be installed. We do a lot of solar shade structures, but that doesn't mean if there's an application for a roof-mounted solar that, you know, we will not do it. We have done roof-mounted solar for other school districts. So right now we think we can install around 2.3 megawatts of solar in these school in these school sites, but we will revisit each and every one of them. We just wanted to give you an example of, you know, what a school site would look like. This is San Luis Obispo High School, and these are the solar panels that we are planning. These are solar shade structures, but here we have a solar array on a roof. And the reason we are doing that is because there are existing solar hot water panels here, which are much heavier than these panels. So we know for sure that there is not going to be a DSA problem here. So we are placing these solar panels here on the roof and the shade structures. This is a picture of the San Luis Obispo High School parking lot. And we just did a rendition of what a solar shade structure would look like. I'm sorry, it's not very clear. I think it's a little dark, but these are the shade structures. Okay, great. Let's talk about the financials a little bit. As Mr. Parker wanted, we have several scenarios here ranging from on different escalation rates, you know, for the PPA, 3%, 3.5%, 4%, and different projected utility cost escalation rates. And these are the savings. So the darker area is the savings over 10 years, and the lighter area is the top is the savings over 25 years. We just wanted to, just to explain this slide, we pulled one of the rates, and I'm going to take you through this. So this is a scenario where we have a 3% PPA escalation and a 5% utility escalation. The important thing to note here is that, so the red is the PPA cost. This line represents The green line represents your business as usual. If you don't do a project, this is how much you will pay. And the purple are the savings. So your savings over 25 years are approximately $6 million under this scenario. But the more important thing is you're never upside down. So you're never losing money. Even in the first year, you're saving $8,000, and the savings just add up. You're never upside down. So that's the most important thing. We want to design a project where, you know, we want to make sure that as far as possible, the district doesn't spend more than what they would have if they wouldn't have done the solar project. And that's a key, how we design the PPA escalation, the utility rate escalation. And there's a lot of research that we do when we do the detailed analysis. You know, the main benefit of PPAs, for in our experience that other school districts have found, is it's a hedge. It's a hedge against, if there's nobody from PG&E here, I can say from the whims and fancies of PG&E, you know. So it's a hedge against, you know, PG&E. Southern California Edison just announced an increase of 13% in their rates effective October of this year. PG&E probably is following suit because, you know, they really, the rates are pretty close. So what a PPA does for you is provide a hedge. And over time, we've looked at, you know, several options, you know, like pegging the PPA escalation to the utility escalation. And it wasn't very attractive because you lose the hedge. Because now, again, you're depending on PG&E's escalation rate. So the big benefit of PPAs is that you have a budgetable cost, utility cost in your general fund. You know every year what it's going to be for the next 25 years. So by pegging it to the PG&E escalation rate, you lose that benefit. And if you design the PPA escalation, the utility escalation, you know, if the utility is escalating at a much higher rate than the PPA, you're losing that benefit of a PPA. And I don't know if I'm explaining that well, but I'll be happy to answer more questions about that. We would file all the incentives for the, you know, we've done that for the school districts, but it is available if the district so chooses to use. At the minimum, we would have something like a digital display that we are showing here, or a page on your website, which shows how much each school is producing in kilowatt hours. It'll show how much greenhouse gases are being avoided that time, year to date. So that's something we will do as a minimum. You know, if you want to get the message out to the community, we'll be happy to take part in that. Let me talk a little bit about the local economic impact. As you mentioned, it makes sense for us financially also to use local subcontractors. There are two major subcontractors on this project. One is an electrical, and one would be steel. We are just finishing off a project for City of Lompoc. We used a local electrical contractor for that, Thoma Electric, and you know, it'll be our intention. We worked very well. They did a great job for us. It'll be our intention to use them again on this project if you move forward with us. As far as the steel side, we would hire local labor. So we think very conservatively that this project will result in a minimum of 23 direct jobs in the community. This is, you know, the installers, the maintenance folks, so that 23 local jobs. And actually, it's there are statistics that prove that for each local job, you produce 5 associated jobs along with that. But 23 local jobs, and it'll have an impact of at least $2.3 million in the local economy. So did that answer your question? Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. I didn't realize it's going to I didn't. Okay. So anyway, I think I've gone through most of this. I don't know why it's. Oh, okay. I wasn't going to go one by one over this, but I think the key reasons, the key benefits that we provide is, you know, our experience with other school districts, our experience with DSA, and, you know, we have the financial capability to enter into a contract for 25 years, and you'll be assured that we will be there for 25 years from now. This process, you know, it'll take from today, it'll take around 12 to 18 months, so roughly 15 months for completion. So this is a quote from Dave Thurman again about two of our projects. But in conclusion, what I would like to stress is that what Chevron offers to you is really peace of mind, the peace of mind of knowing that we would, you know, we've been in this, we're the largest employer in the state. We've been around for 125 years. You're entering into a 20 to 25-year contract. We would be around for the next 20 to 25 years for sure. We have over $150 billion in assets. We can stand here and say that if anything goes wrong, we will make the district whole for the next 25 years. I think that's the end of my presentation, and I'll be happy to take questions now.
Mr. Spanifor.
Thank you very much. Have you done any studies to determine how much energy that California will consume in 25 years will be produced by solar or other alternative? Have you projected out what you foresee?
I'm sure there are statistics out there. The one that I remember is that electricity consumption would double by 2030. So the price of electricity is definitely, because there's a whole discussion around transmission lines. And even though you might produce more power generating stations, you don't have the transmission lines to transport electricity, let's say, from the East Coast to the West Coast or from Texas to here. So what's going to happen is that the demand is going to be extremely high, and the supply would be a constraint, so the price of electricity will go up more than it has in the past. Secondly, there are, as you probably are aware, that there are renewable portfolio standards. So in California, you have to produce 30% electricity through renewable energy by year 2030, and I think it's 20% by year 2015. Which means more solar, more wind, which will also lead to higher energy prices. Without going into a lot of convoluted contractual elements, which as a company we don't like to do, but it is basically the simple answer is you'll have to pay us what the fair market value of that system is at the end of 25 years, or we take the system away. As you can imagine, after 25 years, it will be much more expensive for us to take the system away. And the life of a solar panel is at least 30 years. It's warranted for 25 years. So after the end of 25 years, I think the value of the real fair market value would be very minimal. I wouldn't like to project what it is, but it'll be extremely minimal at that point.
Not that I'll be on the school board in 25 years, but who determines the value of the system at that point in time? Is that in the contract?
I think it's there are termination values in the contract, which are different from fair market value. The termination value means, you know, at the end of 6 years, you can buy the system from us, and that's a termination value. But at the end of 25 years, there'll be a termination value that the fair market value would be basically an arm's length transaction. You call a person and say, how much do you want for the system? You know, the reason we have a 25-year contract is it's basically zero at that point, even though it's supposed to be fair market value, but it's pretty close to zero at that point.
Okay. Thank you.
So that would be even though after 25 years it should still be producing 80%?
We have designed a points solar panels degrade at around 0.7% per year. So you're right. It's around 20% over 25 years. So you're still getting 80% of the energy. So,
but yet its value would be very low for a purchase?
Because of several factors. One, even though you have an asset that's producing, it'll be very difficult for somebody to come and pick up that asset, install it. The technology at that time would be completely different. Mm-hmm. So it'll not be beneficial for somebody else to come in and take that system. That's right. Why the price would be low, but it doesn't mean that the benefit to you is low.
I see.
Yeah.
And then I wondered, early on in the presentation, at one point you said, we keep the savings.
You keep the savings.
And I wrote that down with a question mark. What did you mean when you said that?
Okay, so let's say we're saying that the system is going to produce 100,000 kilowatt hours. And for each kilowatt hour, let's say you're saving a penny. It's just an example.
Okay.
If you produce 101 kilowatt hours, if our system produces 1 kilowatt hour more, you've now gained another penny in savings. That's yours, right? But if the system generates 1 kilowatt hour less, you've lost a penny. I'm going to give you that penny. So the downside is covered by us. The upside is all yours.
So that while it would be producing on the weekends during Easter vacation or spring break or over the summer, that additional energy.
Well, we factor that in our calculations. So when we'll tell you that this system at San Luis Obispo High School is going to produce 100,000 kilowatt hours, we've already figured that the system is up and running for 365 days.
I see.
And it's, you know, this is the weather condition in San Luis Obispo, so there are programs that determine how much they will produce, and we'll guarantee that production. So we'll guarantee to the district that this system is going to produce these many kilowatt hours. If it produces less, we make up the difference. If it produces more, you keep
saving. I see what you're saying. Thank you.
Sure.
Dr. Eisenrath-Rogers?
Yes. Hi. You mentioned the pre-approved DSA shade structures.
Uh-huh.
Can you tell us whether any of the ones that have been pre-approved that can be approved in a two-day turnaround are actually suitable designs for this area in terms of the weight of the steel that's used, in terms of the function?
I don't see any reason. That's a particular shade structure. It's a dual span, so you have two cars parked underneath. So if, like for San Luis, this one here is a structure that is DSA approved. But if there's a situation that we have only a single row that we can put in a school district, that is not a DSA approved design, so we'll have to go to DSA for that. So, but as far as, you know, the structural, I mean, if there's something unique about the soil.
If you're approved statewide for a particular structure,
mm-hmm.
will it be overbuilt in some applications? I mean, it won't be underbuilt because you can't do that, but will it be overbuilt in some applications because it was approved for statewide use?
We have designed a shade structure, and this is actually our fourth design that we just got approved 2 weeks ago. I don't think I would call that design an over-design by any means. I think it's a pretty economical design which looks decent. That's why it takes us, you know, 2 to 4 months to finalize all these this design, and because we do want to show you that shade structure and see whether aesthetically you're fine with it. You know, so that's one thing. We are going to look at soil conditions, make sure that it works. So I don't think it's an over-design. And that structure, actually, we are so efficient now because we are building that everywhere that we do have, we can do it very economically.
Okay. And on the CSI, could you go back to that slide with the steps? Actually, it was the. Yeah. We're on step six, as I understand it now.
Right.
So if we can't get our placeholder in and get ourselves in step six, then the CSI for step seven, and the incentive is going to decrease by 7 cents per kilowatt hour.
That's correct.
Okay. But once we have reserved our position on step six, even if we do run into delays related to adjusting the shade structures and going through DSA, we would be protected to at least get the incentives for the project on step six.
Yes, once you reserve the incentive, once PG&E accepts your application, the incentive is reserved at that level. You have certain steps, not these steps, but certain steps you have to make to show progress to PG&E. So within 90 days, you have to show that you actually have placed an order on a company. There are certain other steps.
Okay.
You have 9 months after that to take, and there's some, for public entities, they give you 3 months of flexibility. We have a pretty good relationship both with PG&E and Southern California Edison, and we have been able to persuade them if there was a delay. It wasn't for a solar project, but another project, a cogeneration project, that they actually worked with us because there was a delay. So they generally, PG&E, this is not PG&E's money. This is money that's coming out of your public goods charge that you pay. So, and this is a PUC mandated program, so the PG&E would work with you. They have no reason not to.
And, it's so fleeting at times. In your experience with the other school districts, have you had delays or difficulties that threaten whatever stage, whatever step that particular project was under?
Yes. And usually the delay comes from the initial decision-making process.
Okay.
If that gets delayed, it's not the construction aspect of it. It is usually we... So in this case also, you know, we'll watch the incentive program carefully, and we will apply the day we think. You want to apply as late as possible because it gives you flexibility on the back end.
Where
you want to make sure
because your
clock starts ticking. So we will be watching, and you know that's what our team does: is watch that incentive program, make sure we apply it at the right moment. And so it's. You know, we're very careful on when we apply. And sorry, I forgot your question.
That's okay. You covered it for me. And
all right.
I just want to make sure that I'm not assuming things.
Sure.
These are fixed panels. They're not like the, I think it was
these
the
are not,
college that tracks the.
No, we do tracking projects for ground-mounted solar. For shade structures, you know, you have to evaluate what happens when you track. The distance between the panels has to be more because you don't want to have one panel shade the next.
All right. Yeah.
So we have to be. There's a lot of maintenance needed for those trackers. So there's a cost benefit, and we've done this cost benefit relationships for shade structures, and it doesn't work out for shade structures or roof. But I think for ground-mounted, it is a good thing. For large systems, for a school district, I would definitely not recommend, if it's fake and we don't do anything till we get that approval. So this is more of a partnership, and it is... Let me answer it another way. The reason Chevron is in this business is... And the reason we focus only on public sector, and this is not an official Chevron statement, but it's because we like the public relations benefit of doing renewable energy. That's one of the main reasons Chevron is in this business. It's because of the benefits being an oil company that this brings to us. What it does, so we don't have the same profit pressures that other company has, because as a company, we don't make, we're not even a decimal point on Chevron's balance sheet. The only mandate from Chevron is every project has to be successful. That is the reason we exist, our company, is that every project has to be a successful project. We don't want any newspaper article where, you know, it comes out that Chevron went in and did a project and the school district's not happy with it. So that is our philosophy. You know, we will never do anything which we believe that you do not want.
And then the other question was, you had mentioned at San Luis High School the possibility of projecting a system on top of a roof.
Good
right.
Catch.
Who would pay for any repairs to a roof where a system has to be removed, or there has to be something that's unrelated to the photovoltaic
yeah.
system but relates to the cost of what mm-hmm. happens underneath there?
Yeah, you've hit upon the very reason we don't like to do roof structures. But we've only looked at, in this 2.3 megawatts that I presented, only two locations, both where you have existing solar panels. And you're right, you know, we would not be comfortable. We would want to make sure that the roof is already is re-roofed recently, and we would definitely work with staff. It's something that will come out in our detailed analysis. It's not, we're not going to just recommend that without really looking at it in detail.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Anyone else? Okay, then. I think we have no further questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks
Thank
a
you.
Lot.
Thank you, Ashu. I'll bring the other group out and we'll support deliberation.
If we go forward, Chu.
I
know, yeah. Thank you, but for a moment.
I don't know. I think that, you know, that the engineer that they intend to use is listed on the projects that they install, and it must be that those pre-approved panels were developed by that engineer for Chevron and their proprietary, the ones that are the over-the-counter. I'm going to ask. I like that they have the programs for students and teachers that are online. RDC and very many people. Oh, I'm the engineer.
Oh, I think so. No, I don't know. I think there's aspects here that are real interesting.
I'd like to give them a chance.
You guys ready?
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
We were having a sidebar. Okay. Who would like to begin? Mr. Spatafor.
Thank you. I wanted to thank both companies, groups that came tonight. Very impressive, and for me personally, and I'm sure for a lot of other board members, this is an exciting opportunity that I hope we tonight make a decision so we can move quickly to make this a reality, that this is part of the future, not only for the school district, but for the state and the country regarding alternative energy sources. It's difficult to always make choices, especially when you have presentations from two groups that are both eminently qualified. I know that's going to be difficult for us, but I hope that the board does what is needed tonight to make a decision so we can move forward with who's selected and see this, you know, come to fruition. And with that, as we always do, we allow everyone to contribute, and then we kind of reach a consensus and see where we go from there. But I hope we make our decision tonight.
Thank you. Well, I have a question. Rec Solar proposes to use to bring in Blymeyer to engineer. And I noticed in the materials that when I was reading them at home that two of the projects that Blymeyer were shown to us as having been involved in are Milpitas and San Jose.
They were Blymeyer designs, but our team worked with them, and those designs are proprietary to us. We paid Blymeyer for them.
Okay, so you have the 1 to 2 day turnaround on those designs,
right.
And you would need Blymeyer to come in and engineer for this project.
Yeah, correct. So no doubt, Blymeyer has worked with many, many projects, and clearly some of the projects that they've done have been with Chevron, among other solar contractors. So The state-approved canopy design structure, in fact, is owned by Chevron, which is why we indicated in our discussion that we would be doing a over-the-counter permit, which is specific for San Luis Coastal Unified School District with Blymeyer, which would require approximately an 8-week turnaround to get that approved for the district.
Okay. Thank you. What else did I have at this point? I don't have any other questions right now. Is anyone else?
Well, I'll start off here. I'm more comfortable with the notion that with Chevron we have one party providing all of it, partly because they're a large international corporation with a lot of dollars to make sure the project is completed. I also like their educational component. Is that a separate kind of negotiated cost, or is that inclusive in the overall PPA agreement?
It is customized to the district, so we need to work with the district staff, with the Assistant Superintendent of Education, to develop that program. It is customized. We have former teachers who work for us, but the program itself, compared to the size of the project you're considering, is very minuscule.
Okay. I also, I understand a little more clearly now the Blymeyer relationship, but I also am impressed with Chevron's experience to date with building shade structures. And I have to tell you, I was not a fan of shade structures when we first embarked on these discussions, just because some of our sites are, I think about Baywood in particular, that great oak tree, and a lot of the just the way the campuses appear. I'm kind of recovering a little bit from the aesthetic nervousness shock. That I feel. Shock might be a better word. And it's partly because this is such a compelling kind of project for our district to embark on. I like the fact that REC is local, even though I have to say that I'm not sure. I know that translates to benefits for the community, but I'm not sure that the way Chevron has at least outlined how they would proceed with contractors, that's something that perhaps has more of an equal footing in our decision making. One of the questions I had is the steel fabrication going to, for Chevron's approach, is the steel fabrication done elsewhere, and then it's the contract labor and things that are used?
You want to come in and
answer that? Okay. Yeah, they won't do it down here.
We would typically use a manufacturer located in the Bay Area to produce the steel. We found that to be the most efficient.
Okay.
And then we would erect the steel here. we add to the top of the T structure, we add what we call a Z channel, which the panels are actually mounted to. That steel would be installed here.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. So I guess that's my list of things so far. It's kind of hard to be thinking about making a decision tonight, but I guess that's what we get paid the big bucks to be school board members for. So.
Phil. Thank you. My question, a long time ago after Walt's thinking there, is can Rec Solar also put rooftop-mounted solar panels on the high school? Or well, basically, I'm looking at maximizing our solar energy output there. So I know, like, Hawthorne School does not have any place to put a shade spot. So I want to know if in the future both companies can put a rooftop mounted panel.
So I'd like to address 2 points with the response. So first and foremost, the initial contractors coming to the table, and so I would then question what actual contractors in the San Luis Obispo area have experience in actually building large-scale solar projects. So the experience is only as good as the experience of the individual members of the respective team, which is why we've brought the entire team to the table to try to individually represent that. No one company, neither of the companies presenting here today, are going to be doing every aspect of that project in-house, i.e. employing every engineer, every installer, every project manager, construction manager, and hence the representation. So in essence, we are also bringing a single team to the table. The team is just fully represented tonight.
Okay. Mr. Millar?
Actually, my comment was more about the PPA. I'm sure Sun Edison is a good company. I just don't know anything about Sun Edison until this material was presented to us, and it seems like they're a pretty integral player since they got the finance end. And I'm not sure a working relationship with Goldman Sachs or Wells Fargo is all that much of a merit badge anymore, even notwithstanding Goldman's earnings. So that was the reason for my comment. I do appreciate what you're saying about the team and the folks who are going to be actually doing the work. But that was more what I was looking at was the PPA finance portion.
Dr. Eisenrathra, oh please.
I was just going to respond to Trustee Angel's comment about I think it was Hawthorne School. Yeah, if that doesn't, and I've discussed this with Mr. Parker. You know, that doesn't have any parking area. So we would be looking at a roof installation there. Again, you know, with our experience, what our experience has been is that shade structures for school district is the best way to go. But if there is no parking lot available, we would definitely look at roofs. That doesn't mean we'll implement it unless we are totally satisfied about the integrity of the roof and who is responsible for that integrity of the roof going forward. So there are questions around that. But we've done several roof installations. We're not going to shy away from them for school districts. You know, for San Jose, we've done roof installations also. So over time, we've experienced that. Our experience has been shade structures is the way to go. Thanks.
Dr. Eisenrath Rogers. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you have a comment?
I just wanted to clarify something on the financial side of the equation. Maybe I'm ignorant, but I'm not sure that any provider of power purchase agreements in the industry actually uses their own capital. Everybody brings in investors from some source or another. And so the question becomes, what does that total financial picture look like, and what are the advantages that are being brought to the table? And can you access capital in a constrained market? We are the largest provider, as you've already heard, in terms of the power purchase side of the world. So we are, I would argue, on equal footing with a Chevron as far as the ability to bring financeable projects to the table. If you look at the last period in terms of who's actually been financing solar power purchase agreements, Sun Edison leads that market, particularly since the economic meltdown of the last 6 months.
Thank you. Catherine, I've been trying.
Thank you.
I just want to say I have a great deal of respect for the two firms that have been brought to us today, and thank you, Mr. Parker, for vetting this process so well, so that we have before us two excellent choices for this endeavor. I guess I would say that all things being equal, I would have a strong bias toward using a local firm, because I think we have a responsibility to this community economically and because of the number of people that are employed by Rec Solar, 125 employees that are members of our community, and that we have a responsibility, I think, to seriously consider the impact of that decision on families, on the community. And as we look at the project, it seems to me as though what the question we have to ask thing is, are all things equal? And maybe we can focus on looking at which things we feel are not equal and answer some of those questions. And I have one, if I may. One of the questions was that I asked the question earlier of Rec Solar of would there be a guarantee if the project doesn't produce as you've predicted, would you be able to write a check as Chevron has promised to do if we end up in that upside down situation as we go forward? Is that something that can be that you could conceive of doing?
So I think the answer was, I think we have to clarify, are we talking about a performance? In the addressing of the question, I'm sorry if I didn't clarify, those are two of the things that, yes, would be guaranteed with the system. What we can't guarantee is what PG&E rates do in the future. So,
unless we do tariff indexing.
Correct. So I think we're addressing, and I think we're stating the same thing. There's production guarantees associated with the system, and you have a guarantee of what the rate escalation is. What we can't guarantee is PG&E rate. So under a worst-case scenario, the system produces what we say it's going to produce. You have the bill from the PPA from SunEdison, as we suggest, but PG&E rates go down. You would thus not have a savings, but I don't think either company would be writing you a check for the reduction in PG&E costs because of a rate decrease. Does that answer the question?
I'd actually have to ask your help to explain your example. The example you gave us was, if your production goes one penny over, you get that penny back. We keep it.
Right.
If the production goes one penny under, we give it back to you. Can you explain what that means?
No. If the production is under what we state in the contract, so if our system produces less than what we say, we're going to make the district whole. So we're going to pay you what you would have lost in that situation. If the production is more, mm-hmm. then the additional savings are yours.
Are we talking apples and apples now?
So the answer is the same.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so it is the same guarantee under both circumstances, i.e. if it doesn't produce, the relative savings you would realize between what you would have been paying and what you are paying will be made whole. For the additional production, the additional savings above and beyond are going to the district. It's a very similar structure in both third-party financing agreements.
Let me, if I may, clarify something really quick. So we're talking about production as a sense of kilowatt hours. We produce X number of kilowatt hours. If you're under that production, there's a lost savings context. You would have seen savings based on so many cents per kilowatt hour, and that can be made whole. Okay, that's a production guarantee. If what you're looking for is that you will always save, a guarantee that you will always save against utility tariffs, then what you're talking about is tariff indexing, okay? And there's two types of pricing. There's fixed pricing, which is mostly what we've been talking about, but if you want to guarantee that you will always be under the utility rate, and SunEdison is actually the only company in the state that has any extensive experience doing this. The state of California got us into this a few years back, and there's a very complex back end on the billing and the calculation of what the tariff effect would be. We can also give you that type of pricing as well. But two different types of risks that you're trying to manage, and we just need your guidance on what you would like to focus on.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
So, Mr. Angel.
I agree with Catherine in that
if all things are equal, we need to think locally. So having said that, how many public school projects has Rec Solar done? I know Poway.
Under our direct management, Poway Unified is the only project that we've completed under the direct management with REC Solar and this project team. So we're definitely, in this case, absolutely leveraging the experience of the engineering firm and SunEdison and our experience when we've come to San Luis Coastal.
Madam President, may I continue?
Yes.
My line of questioning. what were the challenges in working with school district that you saw? And what did you learn?
What did we learn? Chris, do you want to talk to the engineering side? I mean, clearly every time when you're working through a new project, DSA roof-mounted systems, you don't have the simplicity of working through a pre-approved design because each school were encompassing slightly different challenges, slightly different roofs. I think really in working with the timing, to meet the timing expectations and working through the various DSA qualifications is something that is a unique challenge per district when you're working on non-standardized system installations. And that was the primary learning that we took, which is why a canopy-type installation actually, albeit some different complexity, there's some simplicity to it, which it is a very standardized installation.
We took a similar approach, and we actually worked with another engineering firm that did have some experience with DSA. I'd say, if you say lessons learned taken away from there, their experience was very strong on the electrical side. We went in with our mounting system, so it took a little longer to get through the DSA approval, which is why we've shifted focus a little bit when we've looked at which engineering groups we'd be willing to work with on this project.
John.
I'm going to move a little bit forward in the same way, vein that Walt did, in the sense that, as Catherine had said and others, this is a wonderful opportunity to have two firms that are presenting good projects. And unfortunately, it is very strongly interested in only the shade structures on parking areas. And I believe that there is a value to the fact that Chevron has done several of those. And I believe there's a value to the turnaround time with the DSA relative to those permits being drawn before. And I would like to see us get under the first tier, or the tier that's available now, and move forward, six, so we can have that as an added benefit to the cost structure that will be available. As I said, this is very, very difficult because there's very, very good reasons to go either way. But I believe the factors for me that would make my vote toward Chevron is because of the experience with the schools, the number of projects they've had already with the shade structures in the parking areas, the fact that I know they have used local companies to assist in the projects, is, and the faster turnaround time, it would make me vote for Chevron on this project.
I think I would just like to clarify one thing, if I may.
Please.
When I talk in terms of a local firm, I'm not just thinking of the construction workers working on the project. I think of investing in our community and in investing in a firm that's going to be here for the long term, and the families which will send their children to our schools and stimulate our own local economy on a long-term basis. So not just the hiring of a temporary crew.
And just quickly, if I can address the rebate issue. The turnaround time in respect to pulling a permit with DSA is not what is driving the rebate reservation. As I had tried to address earlier, and maybe I wasn't as succinct as possible, the rebate reservation process will transpire and take place well in advance of any permitting being pulled by any company that the school board decides to move forward with. So once that rebate is reserved, that's going to be the next step in advance of engineering, in advance of permitting, well in advance of construction. So whether you're talking 2 hours for the over-the-counter or 8 weeks, if you're taking a new project to get a DSA over-the-counter permit specified per San Luis County or per San Luis Coastal, That 8 weeks is going to have no representation into the rebate funds, which you're reserving, because that takes place well in advance of either of those projects going forward.
Thanks for clarifying that.
Walter.
Well, and I appreciate that clarification. That was kind of what I understood from both presentations, that the reserving to step six was not a difference between the two companies. Yes, using the local company is a good thing, and sure, all the things that Catherine and Phil have alluded to, but I would say the paramount thing is that if we're going to do this, we better make sure it gets done right and is successful. I agree with John that I think Chevron's experience, and again, you know, REC is going to hire the engineering firm that these guys already own the state-approved structures of to come up with another state-approved structure. Then the REC is going to utilize the services of Sun Edison to provide it as the PPA and financier of the project, as opposed to Chevron being that party as well. I think my confidence level, based on experience in the financial part of it, and this is not a, you know, the scales are tipped way over here versus way over there, but I think my nod goes to Chevron, but it is a close call.
Well, I guess, Mr. Parker.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, you may.
I think I heard the question asked before, but I'm not sure we got clarity. And in just in fairness, would Chevron be the financing entity, or would you go to a third-party financing for your money?
That is, we have the capability of financing this ourselves. It is, we have not decided yet whether it will be a Chevron PPA. I would love to say that it is going to be a Chevron PPA, but it's going to be transparent to you. We are heavily considering that Chevron would be the investor for our next.
When you talk about experience, where is the importance of the experience lie? Is the importance in the engineering firm doing the design engineering? That's not Chevron doing the engineering, nor is it REC Solar. That is an engineering firm. From the construction piece as well, if you are subcontracting, as you allude to with Lompoc, you're subcontracting to a contractor. What is the experience of the contractor building the project? If you're doing a third-party financing, what is the experience of the PPA provider? As is clearly demonstrated, where is the money coming from? Who is engineering the project and who is building it? Those are the three components that go into the design construction. The fourth piece is who is operating and maintaining that system and where is it being operated and maintained from? I think one of the clear benefits that you have in working with a local company is what's going to happen if there's a problem with the system? Mr. Parker's going to call and say, hey, REC Solar, there's something wrong with the system. Actually, fundamentally, what's going to happen is Sun Edison's going to know from their monitoring system that something's wrong. And where is that resource going to be deployed from? 5 minutes away. So when you take a look at the experience, I mean, that was really, we clearly understand in many cases that if you say, show us your resume, UREC Solar versus Chevron in DSA experience. Hands down, Chevron clearly has more experience as the GC overseeing entity. But if you take a look at the responsible parties that are actually going to be delivering this project, I challenge that wholeheartedly because you have to look at who is actually doing the fundamental pieces to the project development and the ongoing operations and maintenance. So the trust and the experience needs to lie in that, not necessarily in the entity who is facilitating the transaction.
Let me answer that. I take exception that Odyssey Solar is speaking on behalf of us. We do the design. We are heavily involved in the design. We have 400 engineers on staff. You know, I'm a licensed mechanical engineer. I'm a salesperson. Most people in our company are licensed mechanical, electrical, civil engineers. To say that we subcontract our design is absolutely wrong. We are heavily involved in the design of our systems. We're responsible, turnkey, for the success of the project. It is not any subcontractor. So it is absolutely wrong to say that we are subcontracting to the design and there's no difference in us, you know, in a subcontractor designing in us. We have 400 engineers in the company. So we're definitely involved. They're not just subcontracting. That's not what they're doing.
Let me ask a question. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Okay, so if we go with Chevron, who's going to operate our system?
Chevron is going to be responsible for operation maintenance.
No, what I asked you, I didn't ask you who was responsible for it. I wanted to know who was going to operate it. Is it going to be Chevron? Do you have a facility that's going to monitor it and operate?
Yes, we have an internal group that is responsible. And what this gentleman was saying, you know, we have systems, programs in place which tell us, maybe in advance of even the district finding out, that there's a problem. There's a string monitors tell us, and so we will have our people here.
Yeah, and I'm sure that within your company there's the same talent and,
right,
and available. But I guess what I'm hung up on is you can't tell us tonight that Chevron is going to be the power purchaser from this system, right? Because you're not sure about that. So we're not really.
I mean, it's where's the money coming from? But as far as.
Well, I thought one of the reasons the school district would even want to do this is because the power purchasing agreement would mean that we don't own it, we don't operate it, we just get the savings from it while somebody else owns it, operates it,
yes,
and does that.
That is exactly true.
Is, under your proposal, will Chevron be that company owning and operating the system? Or will it be contracted, sold, assigned to someone else?
The operating of the operation maintenance will not be contracted. It is Chevron who's responsible for that, who does that.
Okay, and where are the facilities that Chevron has that would be monitoring and operating a system here in San Luis Coastal?
We have our monitoring centers in San Francisco, in Kansas City, Pasadena.
And do you have work crews here, or if a problem came up, a short-term problem, you monitor the problem, where would the resources to go out and address that problem come from? But you have a contractor here?
The truck is not going to be a Chevron truck.
Okay. That's probably okay.
It'll be local. Uh-huh. You know, we might have Thoma Electric. We probably will have Thoma Electric do it. Okay. So it's
Thoma.
You know, but as far as, again, every project that we do, we have subcontractors, you know, for steel, for electrical. I'm not standing here and
I'm
telling you that.
I'm fine with the building part of it. I figured
not
either one of you guys could build the system. What I'm looking for is who's going to operate it for us, who's going to own it, who's going to be our partner.
You're
going to
be calling
years.
Chevron for any problem.
Okay.
Okay, I'd like to interject here. My comments, and then I think we may have a problem. I think that both are fully qualified. I wonder how you get experience if people don't give you an opportunity. The fact that Chevron has so much experience is very comforting to me. And yet, I think unless you give people an opportunity, they don't join the experienced group. 125 locally employed people is very significant to me. I mean, I see REC solar trucks in my community where I live. they are a presence that I'm aware of. I think that once either firm got into the tier before it changes, whether it takes 2 days or 8 weeks to pull a permit from the DSA is not really highly significant. At first, I thought it was very significant. I don't think it's so significant now. I like the idea that whoever installs the system, lives with the system, stays with the system, maintains the system. To me, that's highly important. I like that Chevron has the teaching program. I think there's a lot of value in that. I also think we could probably work with Rec Solar to get something going where they could work with kids and teachers so that they, you know, became familiar and it was a learning experience for them as well. I'm prepared to go with Rec Solar tonight. But we need a board majority. We need 4 votes in order to make a decision. And so we need...
Well, 3.
We can't go with 3. We need 4. And we don't have Chris and we don't have Mark.
Yeah, you have a legal requirement. No action can be taken
so
with...
So we can go ahead and try to vote, and if we get a majority, then we get a majority. If we don't, then we have to table this until the next meeting, which, and, you know, time is of the essence on getting in.
Good.
So I think...
May I ask a question?
Certainly.
Is there a cost to waiting till August 18th? To the school district? Yeah, right. I know that Tier 6...
We don't know.
As a neutral party, I'll try and answer that. Potentially. In looking at the tracker that the state has, it all depends on how many megawatts are reserved.
Okay.
It's like going out to dinner. If you wait till 7 o'clock to make a 7:30 reservation, you may not get a reservation.
Okay.
I'm nervous about waiting till August 18th because we don't get our application in August 18th. It's some weeks after that before the application goes
okay.
in. So, you know, unfortunately, I do feel a time pressure to make a decision and move forward tonight.
And, you know, in that vein, I would suggest that we bite the bullet and find out if there's 4 members here tonight that will vote one way or the other so we can move forward. I think we all agree that we want this project to go forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to be a tough decision no matter which way we go. I think there's relative values to both firms. I think some outweigh others, but I think you're talking about issues that aren't major to a deal killer with either firm. But I think, you know, I'm talking to myself as well, I think we need to make a decision, find 4 votes tonight to move forward. To bring this back to August is counterproductive. We'll have 2 board members who haven't sat through this process, who aren't going to be able to understand the give and take that's gone on tonight, the information that's been shared. And I think it's unfair to Chris and to Mark to say to them, come and make a decision knowing very little about what's up. And to tell you the truth, I would vote for Chevron, but my commitment is more to the district, and I respect the 3 that have indicated that. And Mr. Millar's change, I'm always encouraged by flexibility. And I would vote for Rec Solar so we can have this decided tonight.
What about Phil? Get him off the fence.
I'm on the fence, but I would side with the majority. Both companies have presented a great plan. I like the track record that Chevron provides, and on the other side, I like Rec Solar being local. So I would go. I'm comfortable going with either company. So I'll vote with the majority.
So I'd like to make a motion that the board accept the proposal to develop a working relationship with Rec Solar, and we set it up so they will come back with their plan for this specific project regarding San Luis Coastal, as discussed with Mr. Parker's and the administration's involvement.
I'll second.
Okay. So we have a motion by Mr. Spadafore, a second by Dr. Eisengrath-Rogers. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously, and with our thanks to both firms for the tremendous effort that they put into the presentations tonight. Thank you.
Thank you both. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, and good luck.
Thank you.
I need a break. I'm just going to slip out. You go ahead. You go ahead and lead us forward. It's easy. I'm just slipping out for a second. Can you do it? You can't? Okay, I'll lead us forward.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're looking forward to working with you.
Look forward to it.
Okay, item 7. Clarification on whether to agendize boards. Oh, wait. Is Mr. Buckman still with us?
No, he wasn't.
Mark left. He's been on the road since 4 this morning. And Russell points out so is he, but he's still here.
I was up at 4.
You're not elected.
I know.
I'm going to suggest that we pull item 7, absent Mr. Unger and Mr. Buckman. I think it's a discussion that we might want to have at the next meeting when they can be present and participatory.
I agree.
Okay. So then moving on to item 8, proposed revisions to board policy 3100, the budget. Julie Lang.
Good evening.
Sorry.
This is in regards to board policy 3100, which has to do with the budget. It is an existing policy. We have additional language that we've added to it. Which actually aligns it with CSBA recommendations and also with our current policy. At this point, the board has the option of discussing this.
We're going to take advantage of Walt not being able to work here.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to make a motion that we accept and approve this policy as set forth.
Moved by Mr. Spadafore and seconded by Mr. Millar. Those in favor?
Any discussion?
Oh. There is no discussion that I see. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously. Don't go anywhere, Julie. Item 9, proposed revisions to board policy 3460, financial reports and accountability.
And this is also additional language that we've added to board policy 3460 to align it with CSBA, and it's all current procedures that we follow.
And I found nothing objectionable. I'll move approval of item 9.
I'll second.
Moved by myself and seconded by Mr. Angel.
John cured my mind.
Beware. Walt's back online. Hold on.
Okay. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That passes unanimously. Item 10, proposed revisions to board policy 5116.1, intra-district open enrollment. Dr. Matakovich, I believe that is you.
Yes, and following in Ms. Lang's approach, we use the CSBA policy language. But most importantly, we decided to recommend this change in language because our practice is to review parental requests under the intra-district open enrollment procedure, specifically based on school's capacity upon student enrollment and space available. And this extends to programs as well.
And the 116.1, anything that's done non-arbitrarily is also always preferred.
Okay. And I'll second Mr. Spadafore's motion. So we have a motion by Mr. Spadafore, a second by myself. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously. So we move on then to the consent agenda, noting that item 18 has been pulled by Mr. Miller. And let me know if you would like any of these items pulled. Item 11, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item 12, acceptance of donations. Pull. Item 13, disposition of surplus property. 14, approval of furniture and equipment requests.
Pull.
15, approval of purchase orders. 16, approval of warrants and payroll.
I have to pull that because I have to abstain. So that's only for the reason of abstaining.
17, who would like to pull approval of quarterly report on the uniform complaint filings, the Williams settlement?
I just need someone to explain that. No.
Item 19, approval of summer field or study trip.
I would like to make a motion to approve 13, 15, 18?
No.
17 and 19. 13, 15, 17, and 19.
And I'll second that. So moved by Mr. Spadafore, seconded by myself. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That passes unanimously. Mr. Angel.
So there are several temporary employees just waiting in the wings, waiting on a job. What's our plan? If I heard you correctly, you're going to go ahead and hire those soon?
Absent any major change in the budget picture between now and the beginning of August, our intent is to restore those programs and employees.
Okay, and then we'll go ahead and approve them at the August 18th meeting then. Correct?
If there's no change in the budget picture, I think we would have done it by then.
Ah, okay. Thank you. So I go ahead and move for approval of item number 11.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Angel and seconded by Mr. Millar. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Item 11 passes unanimously. I pulled item 12. Because I had a question that I was not able to get an answer to on Friday, which was...
I have the answer.
You have the answer, but let me pose the question. We have a number of donations that we're acknowledging, and we're appreciative of all of the donations that are made to our schools. I went to the last one. I noticed that San Luis Obispo High School received $150 from the ASB for the Tiger Plaza Beautification Project and $458.84 from the class of 1937, making that group 100 years old. And I am wondering how I particularly want to acknowledge that donation.
We received a very nice letter from a lady who apparently is 100 years old. The last time this class had a reunion, they had a sum of money remaining in the bank account that they set up to support these kinds of gatherings, and it managed to lay dormant for a period of time, and the bank remitted it to the state of California. It eventually found its way to this last remaining person that they had contact with, and she has submitted it all to us.
That is just a phenomenal story.
It's like a Tom team.
So, well, we are very appreciative of this donation from the class of 1937.
Thank you for pulling it and sharing that story.
And that said, I will move approval of item 12. Do I have a second?
I thought it was Walt.
Moved by myself and seconded by Mr. Angel. Those in favor? Are you in favor, Walter?
I am in favor.
Opposed? Passes unanimously.
I pulled item 14 just to point out that there were no furniture and equipment requests. And I think in this budget situation, I want to commend staff for... I'll move approval of item 14.
No action is required since there are no requests.
Oh. Thank you.
So do we not have to vote on 14?
Apparently we don't.
Okay, we'll move right on then. Warrants and payroll, item 16. Who pulled that?
I have to abstain. You guys vote.
Okay, Mr. Spadafore is required to abstain from voting on item 16. So I will move approval of item 16.
I will second that.
Then would be fine. I'll be...
Okay, I'm fine.
Noon, is that? You sure? Because I can come late.
Is that a Monday?
I got a 9 o'clock depo in time.
It's a Sunday.
Actually,
Monday.
So that's... I can live with that.
Okay, so are we in agreement then that we will, if provided we can get the facilitator to, if she's able to make a 12 o'clock start? To 12 o'clock? Okay, so then we'll start at 12.
We get one?
Okay. All right, we've completed the business we came to conduct, and we are now adjourned.